We're here at Wollaston today.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what you're actually doing here.
Very good question. Yeah, I just wandered in actually. It was cold outside. Now we're in Wollaston tonight. Doing a Brighter Day show. So this is my seventh book. And we really wanted to create an event where, whether you had faith or no faith, that actually you could come along and have a really good night. Learn things that can help you in your well-being, learn some tools and techniques, listen to some incredible music with a bit of a message as well. And so far so good. So I think this is number 7 or 8. They're all blurring into one at the moment. But really just meeting the most incredible people with their most incredible stories. And we're loving it.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, isn't it? Meeting people. Everybody has a story to tell, whether they know it or not, or whether they believe it. So that must be really great.
It is, and I think what it is, it's about creating safe spaces where people feel like they can tell you their story. Because I think what we often do with stories is we only share the show lights, you know, the highlights reel. And we often do it on social media, don't we? It's like, here's all the highlights of our lives.
And,
and actually, I think when you're honest, that creates an opportunity for someone else to be honest. So honesty breeds more honesty. And then actually, you start to connect at a different level. And I think you start sharing in those things that just make us human. You know, love, loss, grief, sadness, joy. They're all human emotions that we all go through. So it has been amazing meeting some incredible people. And I met people who's come up to me and said, you know, a family relative has died by suicide recently, and they've just been trying to just walk through that and all the challenges that comes. Another person, you know, they lost a husband recently of illness, and what does that, you know, and just so our whole mix as well, you know. And so it's been a privilege to be able to provide that space for people, really.
Yeah, and it's really great that you do. So you're obviously meeting some really interesting people as you go on this Brighter Days tour. But I wonder if you could just sort of share a little bit more about exactly what is Brighter Days. I know you've got a book, and as far as I'm aware, you've got a website as well.
Yeah.
And it's something new that you're starting. So I just wonder if you could share a little bit.
Yeah,
about
no, absolutely.
That.
Brighter Days was originally inspired by Emily Sande's song, which she wrote during the pandemic.
Okay.
And where you know, the whole lyrics was like, that the stuff we go through is really hard, isn't wasted. And sometimes, you know, it could be the torch for someone else's journey. And so what we really wanted to do with this book and this tour is to be able to give people tools for them to be able to use to improve their mental health. Mm. And I think the whole vision behind Brighter Days was we wanted people to, you know, say really loud and clearly that poor mental health doesn't have to be a life sentence. It doesn't always have to be this way when you're struggling.
Yeah.
There is hope. And so what we've done is we've obviously written the book, we've done the tour, we've even started a business to take the message of Brighter Days into the workplace. You know, poor mental health is the biggest cause of staff absences in this country.
Mm.
And it costs the economy, I think, is £119 billion every year, poor mental health.
Wow.
And we know that 45.8 million adults are struggling. And 60% of those people who are struggling say that they never access treatment. And the staggering statistic is 9 out of 10 of people who struggle still think there's so much discrimination and stigma when it comes to your mental health. So we're trying to go into businesses, into educational settings, into hospitality industry, and all sorts of different sectors, really, to try and give people those tools to cope with what life chucks at them at the end of the day.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very needed, you know. I mean, I've had some mental health issues myself.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Mm. And even when you know there's supposedly not so much stigma around, there is.
Yeah.
You feel like there is, especially when it's mental stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's, you know, with physical health, we're very comfortable with thinking about that and talking about that. But with mental health, there still is that sense of, oh, how will people react? And what will they know? Will they treat me differently? And actually, you know, you can struggle with your mental health and still be very high functioning. You know, I think that's the other misconception people have, you know. And And of course, we all have mental health in the same ways we have physical health, but poor mental health can develop into mental illness, just like physical health can develop into physical illness. And there's a difference between mental health and mental illness, and yet I think sometimes we lump them all together and then misunderstand both of them. And so I guess what Brighter Days is saying, like, be really intentional about caring for your mental and emotional health, just in the way you may watch what you eat for your physical health, or you may exercise, you may go to the gym. You sort of know the things you need to do, and I think if we could get into a culture where people know the things to do to care for their mental health, then we can solve a lot of people's pain and agony.
Yeah, and if people know about it and it's acceptable just to do it,
yeah,
like you just watch your diet or go to the gym or whatever,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, and I think there's little tools we can learn as well. There's one thing I learned in the book about anxiety. I talk about negative thoughts and the fact that everyone has negative thoughts, and you know, and you can't stop them coming. They're like trains; they're going to appear every couple of minutes, you know, no matter how. And sometimes, you know, the harder you try not to think about something, the more you think about it. And so, in the book, I do this little tool which is called "Take the Thought to Court," which I quite like. So the idea is, if you put the thought in a courtroom and go, "Is there enough evidence to suggest that this is true?" And 9 times out of 10, there isn't. You know, it's because you're in that negative moment. And sometimes you go, you know, my thoughts are not me. They're my thoughts. They're part of me, but they're not me. That little tip, it can help a little bit.
Yeah, I like that, actually. It sort of sounds a bit like when I did some CBT,
cognitive
behavioural therapy, like to help me back in, you know. And it's just, you know, I did the same kind of thing, but just saying, take the thought to court, it just makes it more kind of fun and
accessible,
manageable
as well. Yeah.
You know, if you are struggling, sometimes it's really hard to actually sort of do anything positive or whatever. So just little things like that. That's what I think it's like really good about this book, your Brighter Days book, the way you've got in there. Lots of little things you can just, I think, like you said, on some appetizing, maybe you can just dip in and dip out, and you just can't deal with like reams of information which is supposed to help you when you're.
It's true, you know, when I had a mental breakdown, or I don't know, it was, like, I felt completely crazy about, it must have been about 7-8 years ago now. And everyone was recommending books, and they were really thick books and medical books.
Great.
And I'm thinking to myself, I can't even read, like, anything, you know what I mean? My head is all over the place.
Yeah.
And it didn't really feel very accessible.
Yeah.
And I just needed something that was just really stripped back and go, oh, I know how to then apply that to my life. And so that's what we tried to do with this book particularly. The other thing we did, which was really interesting, as well as all the normal research that I do, we also did loads of questions on social media, like, what does anxiety feel like, was one. And, oh my goodness, within an hour, literally, Susan, I had hundreds of answers, and they were fascinating. And, you know, I remember asking, what is resilience not, or what is forgiveness not, or what are the symptoms about depression that no one talks about? And it just felt like it made the book really real and authentic. And it wasn't just my voice, it was like loads of people sort of joining in, going, this is what it's like, you know. So I love that about it,
I know, that's what I'm thinking as you're speaking. It's like, it's, you've done this research, you've asked real people, you've pulled it all together and then made it really simple in the book. And, you know, that's so much better than just one person's voice. Because even if you have, say, had anxiety yourself or depression, nobody's two experiences are exactly the same, are they?
No.
So you think you know everything about it. But
And one, you're so right, because one size never fits all.
No.
And that's the key, you know. We use something in the book called, it's from a guy called Professor Patrick Patoni, and he talks about the resilience river, which I think is a really helpful analogy. He says that basically every river has some rocks on the bottom of it. And he talks about the idea of, like, if you're rowing a boat on a river and your resilience river's running low, then you're more likely to crash on those rocks. But those rocks may be very different to you than they are to me. So, like, you know, a rock for me would be loss, because I lost my uncle about a year ago. And a lot of self-help books particularly are like, let's get out the rocks out of the river, let's get them out of your life. And actually,
really?
It's not possible. You know, my uncle's not coming back, you know. Perfectionism, anxiety. And so something like anxiety is interesting for me, because I still struggle with anxiety. But what I've learned is if my resilience river's running really low, bang, I'm going to crash on it, and it's going to like take me out for a couple of weeks. So what I have to work on is, what are those things in my life that drain my resilience river, and what are the things that lift it up? What are those practical things that I can do every day that means that I'm going to be able to float across the anxiety? Though I know it's there, I'm lurking in the background. And I remember doing that at some event, and a lovely lady came up to me, and she'd been on a cancer journey, and she said she put her resilience river on her fridge, and every single day she made sure there was enough arrows going up in her day to make sure that she didn't crash, you know. Yeah. And that's huge. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, actually. Mm. I mean, I wonder, like, you're talking a bit about your anxiety and resilience as well, because obviously, you know, you're doing some amazing things. You do public speaking to lots of people. It could appear like, oh, he's all right, he doesn't know about this, which of course isn't true, and we know that because of things you've written and shared with people. But sort of, what kind of things practically do you do then to help yourself manage and stay resilient and look after yourself, I suppose, that self-compassion that you must...
Yeah, I think it is.
Somehow.
I think it is having that... I've learned over the years, and I'm not an expert in it at all, and I need to remind myself all the time, you know. But that inner dialogue is so huge, you know, it's so huge. Because we are our own biggest critic, you know. I mean, I'll do a talk tonight. The first thing I do is I'll come and sit down and go, oh, I didn't do that very well. Or, you know, that'll be the negative thought that comes in. My inner critic will start getting very, very agitated. And so I think it's learning how do we cope with that, and what are those things that, you know, can produce happiness in our lives. And I remember hearing another researcher saying that one of the key things to happiness is find three things a day that you're really grateful for, and write them down. Don't just say them. There's something about writing them down. And in the book, I talk about gratitude as being hunt the good stuff. So it doesn't mean the bad stuff's not there, but like if you can write down just once a day three things that you're grateful for. The second thing he said, if you could write one email which is just kind to someone else for no reason at all, just to be kind, just for 2 minutes a day, how your relationships will then change and interact with will be amazing. Thirdly, he said, just take 3 or 4 minutes. Don't look at your phone and just watch your breathing, because actually if you do sort of relax breathe in for 7 or an out for 7, whatever it may be, it changes things. And he was saying it's statistically proven, you know, if you could do these things and we build these things into our lives, it does help our well-being. And I think there's definitely a lot of truth in that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, and I know as well, you are a Christian, aren't you? And I was just wondering, you know, how has this helped or even hindered how you are with your mental health?
Yeah, I think spirituality is a massive part of well-being. I think it's often left out of books because it's misunderstood or people have had a really bad experience, and I can 100% understand that. My experiences haven't always been positive, but I think spirituality, what it does is it creates that sense of connection, that sense of purpose, that sense of being connected to a bigger purpose, a bigger being. I think prayer and meditation are incredible ways to deal with anxiety and things like that. And so I think faith definitely has a massive role to play in well-being. And I know for me, it's that sense of not one point do I think like God sometimes like I wish you'd come and take away all my anxiety, and I wish that all the people that I love don't get cancer and, you know, I do well, but they don't, and I've got lots of questions. But I sort of read the Psalms, and David, like 40% of the Psalms are David asking questions, going, I don't get it, I don't understand. But yeah. I trust you anyway. And I feel like I'm in that place where I go, it's confusing for me sometimes, but I trust you anyway. And I think that that's what faith has been for me, is to trust even when it doesn't feel like needing to trust.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I think just before we wrap up, one question. If there was one piece of advice that you'd give someone who's struggling with their mental health right now, what would that be?
Oh, that's easy. So my friend and I, he's one of my best friends. We sign off every text to each other as go gently. Really simple, like, okay. Go gently. Like, just take it a day at a time. Just take an hour at a time if you have to. Don't make yourself feel guilty because you're struggling. Always talk to someone, but go gently. I think gentleness is strength, it's not weakness.
Okay, thank you very much.